keeping it real on cliffcentral.com.
All right, our SME showcase, Trevor Henn from Polytech Forensic Investigations. He's in the studio with us. But last week we had Don De Toy, co-owner of Mark One Media. So download that podcast, which was our SME showcase. All right, folks, here we go. We've got Trevor Henn in the studio. Trevor, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And you've been sitting here, actually. I was tempted to pull you in, but I thought, let me just be disciplined and keep you for the second half. You know, someone who's in this field. But before we go there, you know, you have police background. And I guess sometimes if you jump from there, you want to build on that, which you seem to have done successfully in your life. But you spent many years in the police force.
Yeah, I was 16 years in the police. Left the police force as a station commander. And, investigated crime my whole career. And when I decided to leave, I thought, I don't know anything else, so let's continue doing it just in a little bit of a different way. And I've been doing that since almost 20 years now, so on my own, investigating crime, and I've made some adjustments along the way, and we're still going.
So what did you start off doing? Everything wasn't the way it is today.
No, at first I started doing investigations in a private manner. Investigating small little things for households, investigating thefts taking place at homes, following people, doing all those PI type of jobs. But it developed.
Was it what it seems to be, being a PI?
Definitely not.
I think it's more PI now, right? With technology, right?
It's very difficult. Coming from the police, in the police you had all the infrastructure to use, so it was easy to go into a place and flash a badge and say, this is who I am, this is why I'm here. Doing it on a private basis, you can't. I mean, people say, who are you? Why do you want to come in?
Yeah, where's the warrant?
Where's your what are you doing here? Who are you? So it made it very difficult, but over time you adapt to that and you think of ways how to do it successfully, and yeah, we've managed to do that, and we're still doing the investigations part, although we might have changed the way that we've done it over the last couple of years.
Then you went a little, you just started doing polygraphing. I mean, how did that come into the picture?
In 2004, I added the lie detection part to the investigations part, which is a good tool to use. We use that as an investigations tool for a lot of companies. A lot of the retailers, a lot of the manufacturing companies are using it at the moment. And we also use it in the pre-employment process. When companies employ or decide whether they want to employ someone, they use the polygraph as part of the process.
We'll talk about that more, yeah. People. All right, and now forensic investigations. What else does that entail that we ordinary individuals are not aware of?
Well, we also do the scientific part of it with regards to, like Louis mentioned earlier, audits, which is so important that we do a lot of audits for companies, which is sometimes boring, but it tells you a very specific story with regards to frauds, thefts, and things like that. Auditing C-track records of vehicles traveling, where they go, how long do they stop over at certain places, what the fuel consumption is, a lot of things like that. So it entails a lot of auditing work as well.
All right. Now, in the end, although we can link it with today's theme, you've been running your own business for 20 years, a small business, and that's what our country needs, creating employment, and you've expanded to some degree. How has it been? I mean, not easy. You, in the police, you were running a police station. I guess there were finances involved, and you had some management training behind you, but it's not the real deal. Until you get out there and cash flow matters and you worry to pay salaries and you don't have the... So what have you, how's it been? Not easy, I guess, to survive and live. And it went through easy. Our economic period that you did it in was quite stable and healthy. And then it last 7, 8, 9 years, very difficult. How has the journey been?
It's been difficult, but very rewarding at the same time. becoming or doing more or less the same thing, managing a police station. When I was in the police, you had a backup system. You didn't have a worry of where am I going to get this cash or that money to buy this or that. Getting out of that and doing it on your own, now there's no one to ask. You're the only guy. You've got to ask yourself, and you've got to make it work. And it was difficult, and it sometimes still even today is difficult with the economic times we live in now. A lot of companies tend to say security, investigations, these type of things cost us money. They don't make us money, so we'd rather write off a certain amount of loss than use these guys. So we've got to keep on being proactive and convince them that they need to use us and that it's for the better of their company. So, yeah, it's been very difficult but very rewarding, and I don't think I'll change it for anything.
And at the end, I'll ask you one or two lessons, just key running a small business. What have you learned? Hard lessons. But you listened to our conversation the first half hour, which was about fraud prevention and the deeper way of curbing it. What do you want to add to that? No doubt you would have some strong feelings. You've worked at it. I think you've probably seen at the highest levels it happens. Mm-hmm. When I describe the typical fraud or corruption profile, profile of a fraudster, you obviously use your tools to prevent and to catch. So tell us, what would you add? How do we prevent it? What must companies do? Give us some insight.
Still think, and someone mentioned it just now, the moral part. And I don't think that moral part is only up there at government level. But if a worker sees that the CEO or his own manager is doing things that are immoral, how many times does a manager walk into an office and say, listen, see if you can add this or that to this client and see if we can't make an extra couple of rand from this guy, which we shouldn't actually do.
Mm.
What is this guy saying to his employer? It's okay to do it. So obviously you can't run a business if you don't have good and sound morals, because your people that work for you are going to follow suit because you set the example. So that is the one thing that I say, moral ethics within the management of such a company.
Okay.
The other thing is in communication. I've just come from a client now where the company has decided to change the pay structure of their workers, but they did not inform them prior to this happening. So only at the end of the month when they received their salary, they now see suddenly a change has happened. And no one has been informed.
Mm.
So it's information.
Is that a small business?
It's a big business.
It's a big business.
With maybe 1,000 employees.
Wow. Made a fundamental mistake.
And
people become
upset
and they start doing
stuff. Exactly. And this is going to, this most probably will turn out to be a strike one of these days because of this. But it's communication. We don't communicate, or employers don't communicate with their staff. They walk in and hardly just, don't even greet them. Just, are you doing your work? Fine, carry on with what you're doing. And then they go to the other side. So communication, to speak to your people. I see that every day. I had a case not too long ago where a 5 million rand machine was stolen from a company. And I interviewed a guy and I said, do you know who took this machine? And he said, yes. And he actually told me. And I went to the CEO and I said, but this guy's just told me everything. So he said, but why didn't he tell me that? I said, because you never asked him. No communication. And this is what the guy also said. I said, why didn't you tell your boss about that? He said, he never asked me about it. He's never spoken to me in 2 years that I've worked here. So why should I go and tell him anything?
There's a bit of a us and them in businesses as well.
Exactly.
We're the workers. You're the boss. You're kind of the enemy almost,
yeah,
because we don't have a good communicative relationship.
Yes. So communication is very important, I would say. And then systems, like Louis said, don't take anything for granted. The nice guy might come back to bite you the hardest. You know, make sure that you check whatever needs to be checked on a daily basis. Whether it's small or big things, doesn't matter. Small things add up. I've had a case of a company who had tools going missing. and they did an audit on expensive stuff. But when we did the audit on small things like valve spanners, that actually amounted to something like 30,000 rands worth of valve spanners going missing over a short period of time of people putting that into their pockets. But and tomorrow he just goes to the supervisor and says, I need a valve spanner, and they give him a new one. So no one questions those things being used, and no one they just take it for granted. So systems being checked is just so important.
Interesting practical things we're seeing that you're finding. And corrupt practices in small businesses, you come across that as well as large? I mean, where is it more common?
It's across the board. I just think the bigger the business, the bigger the amount. But the principle stays the same. It's just the values that differ from the size of the company.
All right, now you try and advise businesses to put things in place that will prevent how you employ people. Yeah. I mean, just tell us there, because prevention is better than cure. How can one minimize the risk of this kind of action at the employment stage?
I think obviously that you've never got a guarantee that whoever you employ is not going to be corrupt or is not going to steal. But at least you can make steps and determine or try and determine a risk level that this person poses for the business. So what we do is and a lot of companies just employ people without checking who is this person, where are they from, what's their background, who is the family, what's his financial situation, is there a history of drug use and abuse. All of those type of things, to do those background checks on prospective employees and know at least when the person starts there who this person is, and then continue building a relationship with those people as you go along. But just to employ people, and unfortunately there's a lot of companies that do that, just at random employ someone, oh, you know someone, so tell them to come around tomorrow and we'll give them a job. And we don't know who that is, and that is a major problem. So we, from our side, we also do that. We assist companies with that process, and we draw up a risk analysis report that they can use as part of the employment process. At the end of the day, whether they use it or not is for the company to decide, but that is a good way of knowing who the people are that you employ.
So, Brenda, I mean, practical issues, eh?
Yes, I'm very excited about this. What came to mind while you were talking in the whole line, also what Orion said in terms of prevention is better than cure. You are talking about businesses. I did a bit of a research project a while ago and found that we have a lot of theft and corruption where our school children are concerned. And it starts off with just taking sandwiches out of a friend's bag or stealing their cell phones. My question would be to you is, if you had to take 3 or 4 lessons and put it as part and parcel where our schools are concerned, what would you tell them? Because my question further that is, if children come home and they've got a cell phone that parents don't know where it came from, do they ask them? It's also a parenting issue, not just a moral issue. It's an educational and a parenting issue. My question would be to you is, if you had to tell parents and teachers what to look for where children are concerned and stop it there, then we're not going to have the problem in our businesses. What would you tell them?
Yeah, and that's 100% true. I've actually got a daughter that's a teacher, and she comes home and tells me about things that children do at home and that she can't at school, and she can't believe, you know, that parents are just oblivious to what they do, and they just say it's the teacher's problem. But that actually starts at home, and parents need to look at certain things. I mean, especially nowadays with drugs and stuff being freely available, they should look for children. You know, if your child has suddenly got a lot of money to spend and you know you haven't given this child any money or a new cell phone or something like that, I mean, parents need to question that and say, you know, where, and they need to set boundaries with regards to that, to say, you know, I need to know this and this. You know, a lot of parents say, but, you know, I don't want to make or invade the privacy of my child. As a parent, you should.
You should. You must be able to take their cell phone at any time and look at it or whatever.
But we also need to be realistic here. We have a lot of households now that are run by children.
Sure.
In effect, there'll be no accountability. Mm. You know, if a sibling is running the household and the siblings are going to school, you know, no one is there to really anchor that household to those children to say, hey, where did this come from? Is this from someone else? You know, account for this. That's not going to happen.
And in general, parents kind of abdicating.
So the dysfunctionality of society plays a huge part in terms of, you know, what Trevor is talking
parents
about.
Parents busy? Abdicating the responsibility of education to schools and to others.
And also life is just so tough. I mean, parents are working 14 hours a day. You know, kids are on their own most of the time.
Mm.
You know, so the context of leaving just compounds the problems that we are dealing with. But it's no excuse to sort of say, let's not deal with these issues.
I also sometimes get the feeling that some parents use that excuse to say, we are so busy. I'm working a 17-hour day to look after my children.
Yeah, to provide for you.
To provide for them and to look for their future. Yeah. But in that process, just dropping them off at malls and not worrying what they're doing or things like that. And that is where the problem actually starts in those types of households where they...
Yeah, peer pressure, you know.
So, Brenda, you've just opened up a can of worms. So, yes, if we can fix things in the school, in the family, and go all the way back to the first school of life,
yes.
If we can fix things there, which is a massive problem, and if we talk there, then I almost get depressed. And I'm a hopeful kind of guy, but I almost get depressed because I see that deteriorating, and that results in us having conversations about curbing corruption in business. Because it goes wrong right. initially at the family stage.
I can just mention that I had a case with a female chief financial officer of a big mining company. And we caught her committing fraud to 5-6 million rand. And when we interviewed her...
At a mining company, it's kind of difficult to think how you...
Yeah, CFO, I mean, she has share options.
And exactly. But besides, you know, what moved her to do that, when we questioned her with regards to this, questions like, was this the first time you did this? Have you done this before? And she said, listen, I did not start doing stealing and doing bad things at the age of 45. I started doing that at 6 at home. I stole from my own parents. Later on, stole at school, sandwiches, cell phones, things like that. As a teenager, I ventured into shops and started shoplifting. And as I started working, I saw this opportunity.
But yet a chartered accountant. So she did go on. She studied a good degree.
Yes. She was just never caught. And she continued throughout until she was caught at the age of 45. And she got 15 years.
I think that's where Louis systems need to be put into place to actually pick it up at a very early age. Could I just mention something here?
Yeah, we're coming into the family now, but that's part of the whole
thing. Yes, we developed what we call the Power Intelligence Success Profile, and it's got a report that goes with this. If you are prone, and this is very important, under pressure, if you will revert to make a breakthrough in terms of are you resilient to make a breakthrough to a next level, or if you are going to have a breakdown. Breakdown meaning that you'll go into that negative part of self and then make choices based on fear. Now, I worked in the prisons for 10 years, and what I found is not everyone in prison comes from fear. It's just a question they get an enormous kick out of doing something and getting away with it. And then
shows how intelligent they are, actually. It's a compliment to themselves, I guess.
Exactly. And then only at this later stage they get there. So my question would be, is this is actually also a very important point that needs to be included where teachers' training are concerned and parenting, because if we can prevent this or actually empower children to make the right decisions at an early age, I'm sorry for you, it's going to put you out of a job.
As a parent, he doesn't mind.
But yes, yeah, I really think that'll be wonderful if one could actually do this, because if we don't, as you said, one is really in awe at the pace the country could go down in terms of a tailspin if we don't do
Brenda,
something.
Are you saying this could be measured by psychological tests?
Yes, you can. We developed this because it's a question of how you actually manage your power. And when people come from a certain part of that destructive part of self, they don't know that we can pick it up on a profiling. This will be available within the next few weeks. And it gives a lot of self-mastery tips and a lot of clues. But funnily enough, out of this, we can tell you that this part, a person is a liability because they're coming from a part, and you can even prevent this and tell these people, listen, this is what you are acting for at the moment, and if you are under pressure financially, emotionally, or what have you, your choices could be destructive choices. So let's give you the right skills and tools and help you to to grow beyond this.
All right, we've got an SME owner who's going to pitch his business for 30 seconds and then engage the panel for a moment. Maybe he's got a question, or maybe we want to ask him a question. So we didn't fill up the audience today. We usually do that. We have a couple of SME owners out in the hub who listen and engage the panel, but we do have one who's, we're going to give him an opportunity quickly. Okay, go for it.
Good afternoon. My name is Andrew.
Hi.
I am a business owner. I run a gym. The gym's name is Bodytech. I've been in this industry for more than 20 years. Before I started, I was knocking doors, of course, for financial assistance, which, of course, most of the doors closed into my face, because now you must remember that a gym is something that it's a business that is a little bit more expensive, especially the equipments, you know, and while running around and going back and forth, I finally got funding from Anglo-American, where they assisted me with the funding. And that's last year, you know.
And now you're up and running.
Yeah, I'm up and running.
All right.
Well, I'm in at the age of what's my age now? About 60. I'm 60 years old.
Okay.
You know.
You don't look 60. You look stronger and and healthier. Where do people? Where's your gym?
It's in Renfontein, just opposite the mall at the village square, at the main ring road.
All right, and very
quickly. Do you have a website, Andrew? Do you have a phone number? How do people get hold of you?
Yeah, well, my phone number is, I've got my phone numbers, and I can leave my business cards as well with you guys.
Look, give us the website, Andrew. This is a pitch, remember?
Yes.
Pitching your business.
People are listening. They're not going to look to us to give them business cards. So what's your website?
Our website is www.bodytech.co.nz.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you got a Facebook page?
Yeah, we've got a Facebook page.
All right. Also the same, Bodytech.
Bodytech, yes.
All right. Yeah. So do you have a question for the panel? Anything?
Yes. My question is just that, at this age that I am, you know, I've still got dreams. And I've still got this is my passion. You know, I mean, at this age, still wanted to go out and to grow. You know, at the current membership that I have is 1,500 members, over about 10 months.
Okay.
You know, and of course there are giants out there. Planet Fortress and
Virgin
Actives.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, okay, those are giants.
Okay, we're running out of time. Do you have a question, just very quickly, before we're out of time?
Well, my question is just that. If one want to go out, you know, to spread your wings, you know, to go,
scale.
Yes. What do I need to do?
All right. thank you so much. It's good to I think it's a great story.
Yeah, it's a good
and we
question.
Can talk about that some other time more. He's a man who's 60, started his gym, he looks good.
We must bring him in here.
He got the finances at least last year, but now how do I scale my business with all these people around, these big gyms? I don't have an answer initially, folks, but I was going to ask him, what makes you different from the big gyms? You know, why would I go to you rather than Planet Fitness?
Yeah, look, I think from my part, Andrew, one must compliment you for having started this, because obviously you've niched yourself. You're looking at a, you know, low middle income folks, right?
Yeah, that's right, yes.
So, I mean, I think if you were to be a member of Virgin, you have to most of the time be working and you have your, you know, medical aid and that sort of thing.
Yes, yes, sir.
But there you're making gym lifestyle accessible, you know, to the common man on the street. So, that I think is an opportunity in and of itself.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's a matter of how do you go about marketing yourself, firstly, to sort of grow your membership base. You know, at least that's where I would say the start would have to take place. You know, grow your membership base and also build your loyalty. You know, how are you able to retain the members that you have, or do you have a lot of what would be called attrition in terms of people leaving the gym? So look at the marketing side of things first, in terms of how you're able to optimize the niche that you've covered yourself.
Yeah.
Because I don't think your Virgins and your Planet Fitness are focusing on what you're doing as yet.
Yeah. Okay. Could I maybe just
very
add
quickly,
something
yes,
to quickly? What I really appreciate about you is your age. And the whole age concept is falling away in the terms of success. And I would just like to connect to my colleague here in terms of marketing your business. We need our aged people to become more active. And if you can create that within your gym, that it's not just an age thing in terms of up to 35 and doing bodybuilding, but it can be up to 80 and 85.
Yes, exactly,
you
yes.
are going to have a lot of people coming in. You're going to have a healthier community and you're going to make them more productive. And that way you can also market your business.
So you're actually using your age as a leverage. All right, our time is up. Thank you so much. I'm glad
much.
We could spend a moment with you, Trevor. Very quickly, two questions. One is, what have you really learned key as a small business owner? The hard lesson you've learned that you wish you knew 20 years ago. But then the other one is corruption. Is that on the increase? Just practically, where you deal with the day to day investigations, is it on the increase in our society? Do we have a problem?
First question, what lessons have I learned? The only key to success was work, work, work. Not necessarily work 17 hours a day, but work smart and find ways in making the way you do things smarter. Mm. And that has helped, and I've managed to develop that over a period of time.
Okay.
With regards to fraud, definitely. It is on the increase. The economic situation we are all in, and the whole world's in, and people not wanting to tighten the belt would rather than think of maybe earning an extra couple of rand by committing the fraud. So it's definitely, we find that it is on the increase.
Okay. Thank you so much, Trevor Hinn from Polytech Forensic Investigations. That was very interesting. And I'm sure you can talk about a lot more examples of that example of the CFO, 45 years old, big mining company, and the questioning there. I think we can discover a lot, Brenda, from what he's learned on that side
of
things.
Who busted the CFO, Trevor?
I did.
Through what? Looking at the trail, emails, that sort of thing?
Yes, it was all a audit process that we started looking at expenditures.
Uh-huh.
And invoices being signed off by her office, and then realized that suddenly the mine was using a supplier who's been using the same account for 20 years, and suddenly that bank account detail has changed. And that is where it came out.
So crime doesn't pay.
Crime doesn't pay in the end.
That's an incredible story.
Yeah. It is, man. Thank you so much, Dr. Brenda Hutting, for joining us the last 2 hours. All around leadership. We'll connect more often. And Trevor Hinn from Polytech Forensic. And Alice, good to have you. Next conversation is going to be fascinating. I mean, it's with Wayne Duvenage. We kind of know him, the guy who started taking on e-tolls. and OTA, that's the company, is now much more active in other civic society issues. Recently, something around SABC, and so we'll ask him about the whole transformation.
He's diversifying.
That's good. It's a fascinating part of our society. We need civic society to rise, of course, and we want to talk about that transformation issue. So stay with us. Next up, we talk to our special guest, Wayne Duvenage from OTA.
This is CliffCentral.com.